You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, May 28th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, political director of Credo Action, Becky Bond, will join us. And also on the program today, an interview I did earlier in the week with Congressman Mark Pocan of Wisconsin's 2nd District, 3rd in the leadership of the Progressive Caucus in the House on TPP, or rather the Fast Track Authority, which would lead us to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Also on the program today, brace yourselves, folks, George Pataki has entered the race. Also on the program today, Scott Walker singing the praises of mandatory vaginal probes. They're cool. And a new poll, which really puts this race into perspective and, ladies and gentlemen, suggests Donald Trump could be in that first debate. Meanwhile, Ann Coulter hates brown people. I guess that's just as exciting as George Pataki entering the race, and just as unexpected. All that and more on today's program. I want to start off with some good news. Oh, before we get to that, folks, we've been asked to submit. We've been nominated for a podcast award that apparently is sponsored by Stitcher, and we've been asked to submit a segment of one of our interviews over the past year, more or less, not in the past month, but in the year prior to that. So if you have any suggestions, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Picking out 5 minutes of the last or of 300 shows or 200 shows, 250 shows, whatever it is, between April 30th of this year and May 1st of 2014 is a little bit of a daunting task. So if something sticks out for you, not even necessarily a five-minute segment, but any interview that we'll comb through, please do. At majorityreporters@gmail.com. I want to start with this story today because it's fascinating. I don't follow Nebraskan politics very intimately. In fact, I don't follow Nebraskan politics at all. My buddy Ross Broccoli lives in Lincoln, Nebraska, and has a farm there. And is making some pretty crazy movies, I think, still. But beyond checking in on his CSA, I don't follow what's going on in Nebraska very much. And you can find that CSA at Broccoli, B-R-O-C-K-L-Y, L-E-Y, Pharmaceuticals, spelt like F-A-R-M-ceuticals.com, I believe it is. Meanwhile, in Nebraska, on Wednesday, it became the first conservative state in more than 40 years to abolish the death penalty. And lawmakers did this in defiance of their Republican governor, who is a staunch supporter of capital punishment and had labored vigorously for the state to have the ability to kill people. It was a 30-19 vote that cut across party lines. Remember, you need three quarters, right? Or two thirds, I should say, to override the veto, which the governor had attempted to repeal the state's death penalty law. Or I should say, there was a bill to repeal the state's death penalty law. The governor vetoed it, and then his veto was overridden. And I, you know, without having followed Nebraska politics, it's hard to know sort of how this developed. But they haven't had an execution since 1997. So this isn't one of those situations where they're feeling embarrassed because they botched the killing of a prisoner. It is, I think, indicative of what's happening across the country, where you're starting to see the one place where conservatives and liberals, and not all conservatives, not all liberals, but where you're starting to see some type of transpartisan desire to reform our criminal justice system, this is one small part of it. They, opponents of the death penalty, according to the New York Times, were able to build a coalition that spanned the ideological spectrum by winning the support of Republican legislators who said they believed capital punishment was inefficient, expensive, and out of place with their party values. And then, I guess, along with lawmakers who had religious or moral reasons for supporting the repeal. Nebraska now is the 19th state, also including Washington, D.C., in banning the death penalty. So this is encouraging, if only because now there's 19 more enlightened places in the country in this respect. For me, I don't even know that my efficiency obviously is one element of it. But for me, it's just that I think it's just problematic to say, in addition to it being cruel and sort of uncivilized, I think it's problematic to say that the state, when it's not engaged in a time of war or where no one's life is in danger, you have the this criminal. Presumably they've been convicted, and they're not a threat to anyone. And you can ensure that they're not a threat to anyone by keeping them in some type of high security situation. Then you're just justifying killing. And once you start down that road, that in cold blood, you can kill someone if you got good enough reason. Well, then I think it's hard to argue that other people's good reasons aren't good reasons to kill in cold blood. That's the simplest way for me to boil it down. All right, but so good for Nebraska. I think I'm I may send a, I don't know, thank you note to Nebraska. I'm not sure where I would send it. Maybe I'll send it to Ross Broccoli. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Becky Bond, political director of Credo Action.
Driving on night, you could be a shadow beneath the streetlight behind my home. Driving on night, I sure. Go another mile.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program someone who's been on many times on this program and on my radio show back when we were doing it at Air America. Becky Bond, Vice President and Political Director of Credo Action. Becky, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be with you and the listeners.
And I should remind folks that Credo Mobile is sponsoring this program this month, and people can go to credomobile.com/majority report to check out the deal. But I have said many times, I've had you on the program many times, sometimes when we have a sponsorship going on, sometimes when not, that Credo is one of my favorite organizations out there because you guys go after Democrats as hard as you go after Republicans based upon issues that I don't know, honestly, if there's been a time where you guys have been pursuing an issue that I haven't 100% agreed with. And to that end, I want to talk about a couple of things that are happening right now. One is the Patriot Act. It is set to sunset Sunday night, I believe it is, at 12 midnight. And we're starting to hear all sorts of the NSA is on hot alert right now for the Patriot Act to expire. Tell me a sense. Give me a sense of what Credo is doing, Credo Action is doing in regard to the Patriot Act.
Well, this is a really good example, you know, of one of those issues where, you know, we want to see the Patriot Act. It's time for the Patriot Act to die, and in particular, this Section 215, which is the section that allows for some of the worst abuses of Americans' privacy. And this is not a Democrats or Republicans issue. It's a outsiders versus the Washington machine. It's the American people versus the White House, the security agencies, and a lot of people that we consider to be our friends in Congress. And so, you know, Credo's actually for the first time been part of a really unlikely alliance of Tea Party groups, of libertarian groups, and progressives fighting to get Congress to let the Patriot Act sunset. And the standard bearer, the guy that's been doing the most in Congress right now, with a lot of support from conservatives and liberals alike, is Senator Rand Paul. So it is this crazy moment where people coming together to fight for the issues they care about, not just standing behind their party, are really on the verge of possibly a huge breakthrough where we could see part of the Patriot Act actually sunset at midnight on Sunday.
So, I mean, so what is the strategy here? The House has passed something called the U.S. Freedom Act, and it is – give me your perception of that. That is supposedly says – the big change in terms of the Freedom Act is it basically says the government can no longer warehouse these phone calls. They need to be held by the phone companies themselves, right? And that's the big reform. And then, of course, the government gets access to them. Give me your perspective on the Freedom Act.
Well, so this is a great thing to discuss on your show because you guys talk about strategy and how things actually work as opposed to just the headlines on a day-to-day basis. But this is a classic example of how things work in Washington. So we have this problem, which is that, I mean, unconstitutionally, the security agencies, they're just vacuuming up all of the telephone records of millions of Americans, people who've been accused of no crime. And they're vacuuming up all these, not just all these telephone records, but also all these business records that could include things that you, if you send a money order through Western Union, it could include the to, from, and subject lines of your emails. It could include IP addresses, which would be locational information about where you are, without a warrant. And they've been collecting this since 9/11. And the with the Snowden revelations a couple of years ago, the American people clearly, you know, found this pretty shocking. And in a couple of years, Congress has done absolutely nothing. Until we come up to this moment where the authority for capturing much of this information, actually, they built into the law a sunset. The Patriot Act was never meant to be permanent after it was passed after 9/11, but Congress keeps extending it as it comes up to these built-in deadlines. And after Congress did nothing, you know, they've been for years coming up on this June 1st deadline to sunset the authority for this unconstitutional spying on Americans. And so, as we got to this deadline, as it turns out, there are people like Ron Paul and actually Ron Wyden and Martin Heinrich who won't agree to who won't agree to extending the law as it is. It's been a long time, and it's time to stop, you know, on some way, the unconstitutional spying. And so the White House and the intelligence agencies have gotten behind a bill that was written by Democrats, basically called the USA Freedom Act. And what this act does is it purports to be reform. And it does change some things about how the telephone metadata is kept, but it doesn't stop the dragnet for spying on Americans with these other records, or NSA could simply get these telephone metadata under another legal authority. They could just switch the legal authority that they're using for this. But desperate to do something before the deadline, the White House, the security agencies, Republicans and Democrats have gotten behind this fake reform bill called the USA Freedom Act. And this reform bill, not only does it, you know, it just moves the records to the telephone companies where the NSA will just go and get what they want, but it also provides immunity to the telephone companies for breaking the law and handing over information that they shouldn't, even if they know it's wrong, right? So they give the companies immunity for breaking the law, not unwittingly, but even if they know it. So this is a Trojan horse bill that was passed through the House. 88 members of the House voted against it. 87 of them, led by Justin Amash, voted against it because they see it as fake reform, not because they're pro-surveillance. And so when that bill came to the Senate, Senator Rand Paul said, you know what, we're not going to reauthorize the Patriot Act, not through this fake reform bill, the USA Freedom Act, and we're not going to do the clean reauthorization that Senator McConnell wanted. And what's amazing, too, is that we think Congress can't do anything, but you can see if one senator stands up and refuses to give unanimous consent and filibusters at a strategically important time, they can actually stop bad things from happening. And that's what we're seeing right now. We may actually see the worst parts of the Patriot Act actually suspended on Sunday night, and then Congress will actually have to affirmatively pass the authority for spying. And I think that'll be a much heavier lift, and we'll have people on record who've never had to vote on this before go on the record as supporting unconstitutional spying. And it's a big fight. And Democrats and Republicans, we've got Democrats and Republicans on the right side of this, and we've got Democrats and Republicans on the wrong side of this. And it's something where people who really actually care about our Fourth and First Amendment rights should all be involved right now, as for the first time since September 11th, we actually have within our sights the ability to roll back some of these constitutional abuses.
So in the Senate, you have a situation now where they can't get cloture, they can't go ahead and actually vote on the USA Freedom Act. Part of that was because Rand Paul's filibuster sort of pushed it down the road. Who are those who are not voting for cloture, right? It is basically both Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, they came within three votes of cloture on the USA Freedom Act, and in the Senate, most of the people that are voting against the USA Freedom Act, actually, they're pro-surveillance. It's a weird dynamic,
right? Because they think that the Freedom Act waters down the Patriot Act too much.
That's right. And so it's one of these things. Like you ever wonder why? I mean, your show's called The Majority Report because, for many reasons, but one of which is that, like, you know, the ACLU did a poll. The majority of Americans don't want to see the Patriot Act, reauthorized as it's written. Right. And so but you have situations all the time, you know, whether it's about, women's rights to reproductive health care, or whether it's about corporate tax loopholes for the oil companies, where, you know, minority interests run things through the Senate all the time and win, right, against the will of the majority of the people. This is one where, you know, the majority of the senators are actually being stymied by a small minority that's willing to use parliamentary procedures to fight back and not enforce debate and not give consent. And how this is lining up, too, is really interesting. You know, liberals and progressives often cave and compromise in advance of the real fight. And then what happens is you have all the Democrats signed on to, you know, a bad compromise like USA Freedom. Right. And then when Republicans need extra votes to pass things, they don't actually, you know, they don't actually make the bill better to get more Democrats on board. They usually make the bill worse to get more conservatives on board. And this is something where actually a lot of people have held the line on the USA Freedom Act. And in order to get the USA Freedom Act passed in the Senate, they're probably going to have to make it stronger, and they're going to have to go after the pro-privacy holdouts, and not just go after weakening the bill for the pro-surveillance senators.
It's a very
fluid situation, and without massive citizen pressure backing up these senators to hold strong, the ones that are holding out, you know, we could lose on this. But just the fact that we have a shot at getting the sunsetted is a massive victory.
And then if they were to actually amend the USA Freedom Act, right, it would have to go back to the House, right? I mean,
if they were
to actually make it more more teethy, I guess, or less surveilly-y, it would have to go back to the House, and it would still sort of, I mean, so it's a fascinating dynamic that's taking place here. And let me ask you this. Where is the I think it was the Second Circuit about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, said that particularly that provision, 215, I should say, is being misinterpreted by the government so that it's actually illegal what the NSA has been doing, not necessarily unconstitutional. They even get to the constitutional question of it. Where is that? How is that playing into this? Like, I don't understand how this could be reauthorized when at least one court has already said, like, this is being interpreted illegally. You have to rewrite the statute, or the statute doesn't really allow you to do what you've already been doing.
I know that's what's so crazy, and this is where, you know, you and your listeners are better educated than a lot of staffers and people in the Senate. So the second Circuit Court, a federal court, just ruled a few weeks ago, right, in the heat of this debate, ruled that the bulk surveillance of Americans' telephone records, you know, people, American citizens accused of no crimes, the bulk collection of that by the NSA under Section 215 of the Patriot Act is illegal. So the court said this thing that USA Freedom Act purports to end but doesn't really, right? That this reform bill, like, it's really, you know, the politicians are trying to sort of cover their asses and say we're doing something about this, but they're not. But anyway, the courts have already done this, right? It stayed until a higher court review, but the courts have thrown this out. And so what's crazy is that most members of Congress are just ignoring that, and then they're passing this bill. Not only that wouldn't actually go as far as the court did, but if they pass this bill, it could actually render the decision moot. It could create a new authority for this bulk collection. So it's not that the court said bulk collection of Americans' telephone records was unconstitutional under any law. They just said that Section 215 of the Patriot Act was never meant to cover that. And that's what the NSA is using to justify doing it. And so if Congress knowingly passes a bill, right, now that they know about the bulk collection, if they pass the authority to cover that, then that essentially legalizes bulk collection. So this is the bizarro world where we have Congress trying to pass a bill that purports to end bulk collection, but really, in the end, may provide the legal cover for the NSA, you know, to justify it. And to make things even crazier, the Department of Justice Inspector General, that's the internal watchdog at the DOJ, has come out with a scathing report saying that it could not identify a single major case development that's attributable to intelligence that was collected under Section 215 orders. Right. So, not only is this all unconstitutional and crazy, but it's actually not making us any safer. And yet, this is the fight that's going on in Congress today.
Well, I mean, I was told by the New York Times, I think it was yesterday, that that supposedly we're all on hot alert right now because of this, even though apparently it has never stopped, this authority in particular has never foiled any attack. All right. Well, so let me just I don't want to spend too much more time on this, but one thing you mentioned, like, when this was passed, and I feel like you and I have probably talked about this in the past, but when this was passed in 2001, it was sunsetted, and it just gives you a sense of just sort of how far this country has drifted from where it was 15 years ago in terms of, you know, how important civil liberties were. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, because I remember when this was going down, there was like a real sense of like, this is just immediate and an emergency type of situation. This is something that we're even building into the situation that it will not continue. And now it just seems like the establishment anyways is like, you can't let this expire. We'll all be defenseless.
Yeah, I mean, it's the mindset is just unbelievable, and it's not that they're not real threats out there in the world. The there was actually a joint intelligence bulletin that came out right before Memorial Day that said that analysts at the intelligence agencies were overwhelmed by the sheer volume of social media posts by U.S. people supporting ISIS, right? And so if our intelligence agencies, there's real threats out there, right? Like ISIS and people in the U.S. supporting ISIS on social media, and we don't even have the intelligence capability to read the social media posts by people raising their hands saying, I support ISIS, right?
Right.
But meanwhile, we're spending all of this massive amounts of money, and someone needs to follow the money. These defense contractors running these huge programs to vacuum up all these records of Americans accused of, who've not posted in support of ISIS, accused of no crime, right? And spending vast amounts of money collecting this information that they can't possibly sort through, or use to protect America. It's a folly. They've taken the threat of 9/11 and turned it into a massive boondoggle for defense contractors in a way that's not even going to make us safe. Meanwhile, there may be actual threats out there that should be addressed that are current to today. But we're sort of still fighting over something that happened, many years ago. Yep. That's become sort of an entrenched special interest in Washington. So government is broken, in so many ways. But this is one of them where people are using defense as a way to defraud Americans and take away our rights.
And people should remember that's basically the Thomas Drake story, right? He's number three guy at the NSA, I think it was. And he was complaining about this massive boondoggle. I think it was called Thin Reed, but I can't remember off the top of my head. And Congress shut it down because it was such a boondoggle. He still was drummed out of the agency and persecuted in many ways, not ultimately prosecuted, but persecuted. And, I think at one point was working at an Apple store or at a Mac store. All right. So I want to move to the other thing that you guys have been fighting, because I think it was a week and a half ago when I had announced that you guys were sponsoring the program. I had been talking about the TPP, the story about the TAA, and you'll tell us what that is. Being funded via Medicare had just sort of it had been floating around out there, but it got wider attention. And I literally said at the end of that show, I hope there's somebody out there, some group that is going to be using this Medicare funding as a way of stopping Fast Track Authority in its tracks. And literally 15 minutes after the show, I saw the press release from Credo where you guys were doing exactly that. Tell us about that part of this fight to stop Fast Track Authority.
Right. So I know that you guys talk about this all the time, and the corporations and the White House are trying to ram through this fast-track authority through Congress so they can ram this TPP through. And and what's crazy is that we actually some Democrats actually did stand up and fight back in the Senate on this, but to try and stop the passage of the Fast Track Authority to ram this trade agreement through, but they held it up for a day, and then they cut a compromise, and that was to get votes on a couple of additional bills to provide a little bit of money for worker retraining, people whose jobs are displaced by this. But how they were going to pay for that bill, which is just nuts, is they're going to cut Medicare, right? And so you have Democrats pushing Medicare cuts, right, to help the president get this terrible trade agreement through, right? Or if it's not terrible, they won't show it to us so that we can't know that. So one of the things that we did at Credo is that, we have several lines in the sand, things that we just, that are beyond the pale, and anyone who crosses that line, Democrat or Republican, we're going to hit them, we're going to hit them hard. And one is cuts to Medicare. And so we immediately rolled out ads that targeted Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, Congressman Democrat Rep Ami Bera, that said that they are cutting Medicare in order to move the TPP through Congress. Because if we don't use this against them ahead of these votes, we know the Republicans will use them in elections. We already saw Karl Rove going after Democrats for trying to cut Medicare, and so we wanted to beat the Republicans to the punch.
2010 was all about the shifting of Medicare money from Medicare Advantage to things like closing the donut hole, et cetera, in terms of the Affordable Care Act. And Democrats got really beat up on this. Give me your sense of when that became a big story after the Senate had basically already voted in favor of fast track authority. How is that playing in the House? Like, are you hearing from allies in this fight in the House that Medicare provision made it even more toxic for Democrats to supply any votes to the Republicans who want to pass this?
Well, there's definitely, I mean, for those who are not clearly on the record, there's an atmosphere of fear among Democrats in the House. And what you have is you have the White House, but also all these corporate lobbyists just hammering on people that are not publicly opposed to fast track already, these Democrats, because they're going to need Democratic votes to pass fast track, right? So they're being promised everything. They're being hammered by the White House. They're being promised all the stuff by these corporate lobbyists. And so we know, we can't win if we can't, provide either pain or reward that's equal to, what the White House and these corporate lobbyists are doing. And so one of the big guns, is being willing to go after Democrats on not standing up for Medicare. And so, we, after this happened in the Senate, we didn't just go after senators like Ron Wyden. We went after members of the House because we wanted to send a warning shot, right, to Democrats in the House that if they support fast track, and the package comes with cuts to Medicare, we're going to hit them publicly, calling them willing to cut Medicare. And especially people like Rep. Ami Bera, who is going to be in a tight race, that is something that's going to have to, make the other Democrats think twice about whether they're going to support that. So this is a potent weapon, and we have to pull out all stops to stop this. And but we have to be willing to not just threaten, but truly inflict pain on Democrats in public. Because if they don't, if the other guys are going to hurt them, but we're not, then the other guys are going to win.
And I should say, following our talk, I'm going to run an interview I did with Congressman Mark Pocan from Wisconsin, who has been fighting with the Progressive Caucus, fighting this fast track authority. Get a little more of an update on what the state of play is in the House. I mean, I got to imagine I'm a Democrat and I am not firmly entrenched in a corporate camp. I got to be a little worried because there's an awareness, I would imagine, with these House members that activists are not convinced that the Democrats can take back the House. Most people think that they can't in this cycle. And so the idea of a couple of these corporatists being expendable if they vote for this is not that far-fetched, right? I mean, so it's not like some of these people are calling up Credo and going, you wouldn't dare cause me to lose my re-election. That doesn't make a difference at that point if you're not going to vote for us on this.
If you're not going to stand up for something as big as this, right? This is not the kind of thing that you're like, oh, I'll make up for this with some other funding. I mean, the other thing, too, is that I think Democrats feel like with these procedural things, guy like Rep. Ami Bera, who's a Democrat from California, he's saying, oh, I'm going to vote against the TPP, right, because labor helped get me elected and I'm a Democrat, but I'm going to vote for fast track, right? And so what we have to tell them is like, no, we're not buying it, right? You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say you're against the TPP if you vote for fast track, and this is part of the education that we need to make, and that we politicians get by with this all the time, and some of its organizations don't score them on that. Like, I don't know if you can remember when, Joe Lieberman.
That's exactly what I was thinking when you said that. What you're saying. Go ahead, tell people that.
Voted for cloture on a key Supreme Court nominee, and was still endorsed by pro-choice organizations.
Yep.
Because he voted the right way in the nomination, but he voted the wrong way on cloture. So how we win this fight is by stopping fast track. That's how we win. That's our strategy. And so any Democrat who votes against fast track, if they vote for fast track, they're voting for the TPP. And we have to make it clear we're going to call them out in public. We're not going to let them off because it's hard to hold our friends accountable. We don't like to do that in public. But if we are not willing to do that in public, then we're going to lose.
All right.
And so we have to hold the line.
This is a good place to transition to just talk about what you do at Credo Action, because that dynamic right there, I mean, when you were talking about the politicians who basically try to hoodwink their constituents by saying, I will vote for cloture, but I'm going to vote against the nominee, or I will vote for fast track, but I'm going to vote against the trade deal. And I specifically remember the organizations that did not score Joe Lieberman. In other words, did not tell their members, hey, when Joe Lieberman votes for cloture, he might as well be voting to get this person on the Supreme Court. That is something that your organization, that's what I love about this, and we've talked about this in the past. I know that you get calls from Democrats who are like, why are you doing this? How can you do this? And you guys just don't, I mean, it's not that you don't care, but you just don't care. And an organization that basically said, we're not going to score the cloture vote, that is one that is also sort of playing the same game. You guys don't do that. And that is what I really appreciate about Credo Action, which is why whenever you guys sponsor this program, I'm terribly excited about it. Tell people, just give people a sense of what Credo Mobile does in terms of funding progressive organizations and what the relationship is between Credo Mobile and Credo Action.
Well, so Credo Action, you know, we're a social change. You can think of us as a social change organization that's really fierce. And one of the reasons why we can be fierce is because we don't have to go hat in hand asking people to give us money. We don't have to ask politicians to make fundraising appeals for us and help us raise money. We run a phone company. And it's the money from that phone company that pays for the activism. So when these decisions come up, they're not hard decisions for us, because it's not like some politician is going to tell their donors not to give us money, because we get money from customers. And that's why it's so important to partner with you and get people like your listeners to join Credo Mobile, because that's what makes the activism possible. And I also think, you know, we don't just run a really fierce activism operation. We run a really great phone company, and we know that the phone company is about the customers getting the service that they need at a price that works for them, and to feel like their money is not going to a company that's going to be writing checks to the Ted Cruz's of the world, but go to a company that actually supports things that they care about. And as such, you know, when we run our activism organization, it's not about whether I get to hang out with some politician or not. It's really about whether the activists on the other end get the change that they want. And it's the same thing with the phone company, right? It's like every day we're trying to make sure our customers get what they want. And when you translate that into activism, you know, we can operate really differently than some of the bigger groups that are in D.C. and that thrive on access, where they feel like change is made by, you know, the people in the organization. We know that change is made by all of the millions of Credo members out there that speak out, that drive the activism forward. And it's the same thing with the phone company. It's about making sure that the customers are happy and deliver what they need. And together, it's odd, but we're running a mobile phone company and a fierce activism organization at the same time and making change.
Yeah, and you guys have got some great folks over there that I've known through the years. They've been with different organizations, they've done different things, and I'm really pleased about it. How do you guys deal with NSA surveillance? Do you guys have like one of those canary things, or do you know what I'm talking about? How do you deal with that, or do you guys have those? How do you guys deal with that?
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think you see us at the front of this fight on the Patriot Act, is that we are a telecom, right? And we can be forced to participate in unconstitutional surveillance by the government, right? We can be forced to do that, like any telecom can, right? And we know that the only way to protect our customers from the NSA is to change the rules of the game. And that's why we're so active in this. But we were the first telecom to put out a transparency report, and we report on every government request that we're legally allowed to by law. And you can read that on our Credo Mobile website. You can get to our transparency report. We have we fund and work with groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation and other groups to make sure that we have the most aggressive privacy policies that are allowed by law. But here's the thing, Sam, and your listeners should know about this, is just that, you know, any telecom company that, you know, gets served by these unconstitutional orders, you know, post 9/11, they can't tell you. The law has a gag order attached to it, right? And they can't tell you whether they've received one of those or not, because breaking that law sends people to jail. And so we take this stuff really personally. We know how serious it is because we're subject to these unconstitutional rules, and no one wants to protect their customers more than Credo, because we know that it's important to protect the Fourth Amendment rights to privacy, because that affects your First Amendment rights. And when people know they're being listened to, it affects what they're willing to say. And when your customers are activists, then this is even more important, because lack of Fourth Amendment rights protections has a chilling effect on speech and exercise of First Amendment rights. And this is something that Rand Paul really gets right, and something that he's been talking about as part of this fight against the Patriot Act, that if we care about our First Amendment rights, then we have to go to the mat for our Fourth Amendment rights. And we are, I think it's safe to say, we are the only telecom that's going to the mat to repeal the Patriot Act.
All right. So, Becky, if people want to get involved in both this TPP fight and in the Patriot Act fight, where should they head?
They should go to CredoAction.com, and they can find information about both of those fights there. But in particular, this is a key moment for sunsetting the Patriot Act, and we're allied with a bunch of organizations, and they can go to SunsetThePatriotAct.com. SunsetThePatriotAct.com, and get involved right now in talking to their senators about the votes that are going to be coming up on Sunday.
Becky, I appreciate you hanging with us. I know I held you about probably 10 minutes longer than I had told you, but I thank you so much for talking to me about this stuff, because I'm a big admirer of your organization.
Well, same here, and thank you for talking about this. I mean, people are smarter than politicians think they are. And on some of these issues, your listeners are much more educated than the people in Congress, and we need to be speaking out about these complex issues and let them know we're not going to be fooled.
Thanks, Becky.
Thanks, Sam.
Talk to you soon. And all right, we went a little bit longer than I had anticipated. We've got that interview with Congressman Mark Pocan, which I guess we should run. We're talking to him about the TPP, and he gets more into the issues of the TPP, and then we also discuss the sort of the state of play on the Fast Track Authority. I want to remind you, at the very least, I mean, obviously Credo Mobile is sponsoring the program, and like I say, you can go to credomobile.com/majority report, get a good deal from them, but more importantly, SunsetThePatriotAct.com. We have it linked on our website at majority.fm. And check out Credo Action. Like I say, they're the political arm, if you will, or sort of subsidiary of Credo Mobile. They do great stuff. They really do great stuff. They're really, you know, when this show started, one of the big issues in terms of activism was sort of you would hear quite a bit written about the veal pen. And that is a lot of these sort of advocacy groups, they based out of Washington, D.C., the physicality of it, less of an issue. But the mentality was more important. They needed access. They needed to maintain their allied status with certain lawmakers and certain parts of the Democratic Party, because that it was dictated to them by their funders or whatnot. And of all the groups out there, and I got to say, you know, like the PCCC is also one of those groups that doesn't have the same sort of same dynamic as the veal pen and stuff like that. But Credo out there has always been very aggressive, very willing to get that very angry phone call from some lawmaker saying, hey, I'm on your side. Even though on a particular issue they weren't, and Credo responds, well, not on this one, and we want you to be on this one. So, and we've deemed it enough that we're going to inflict some pain. So check out credoaction.org. We have a link on the website. All right. Now let's just roll into this interview I did that will be playing on Ring of Fire this weekend with Congressman Mark Pocan. He is from Wisconsin's 2nd District. He is also number 3 in the Progressive Caucus in the House. And this TPP stuff is coming down. You know, like I say, they've punted it for the moment, but the more it drags on, the tougher it will be because we're so close to the election. Let's play this now. So, Congressman, I think our audience is fairly familiar with the broad outlines of the TPP or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, But if you could just walk us through this, to the extent that we know what is in this trade deal, walk us through some of the highlights or lowlights, if you will, and the ones that give you the biggest pause.
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, I mean, this is 29 chapters, of which only about five actually deal with trade. And this is involving 40% of the world's gross domestic product. So it's a really big trade agreement. I think some of the things that cause the greatest pause are in the labor and the environmental chapter, the lack of any true enforcement capacity, the ISDS provisions, the investor state dispute settlement provisions that are basically giveaways to the biggest multinational corporations to kind of streamline any dispute resolution process, even if that means trampling local state or local community laws, our sovereignty essentially. The lack of any kind of chapters around currency manipulation is a real problem because some of the language becomes meaningless if you don't address currency manipulation, and really broadly and generally the fact that, you know, this is a super secret document drafted by 600 people, largely corporate CEOs, not drafted by people like you or me. Congress really hasn't been involved at all up to this point, and yet somehow we're supposed to now give our fast-track authority, giving away our ability to amend it, limiting our debate severely to about 2 minutes a member of Congress, and we just think that this is something, because it's so big, it should be done right, not fast.
And you know, and I want to talk about the state of play of this legislation, of the fast track authority, the trade promotion authority, and also I want to talk about the implications for Medicare in this fast track authority. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit more about the secrecy, because I was struck, there was a piece written, I think it was a week or two ago, by someone who is a cleared consultant or a cleared advisor, somebody who's knowledgeable about trade, who's been cleared to look at this document. And even that cleared advisor, a special status, hasn't had access to it. Explain to us, When we hear Congress members talk about the secrecy, explain to us what access you have to the proposed legislation that ultimately you're going to vote on, because I think people would be very surprised to see how limited that is.
Oh, absolutely. So right now it's a couple of books worth, like I said, 29 chapters of trade law. So first of all, not exactly a you know, bathroom reading, so to speak. It's a little, you know, complex, and even if you knew what you're looking for, you really have to be able to ask about certain elements that aren't decided yet, the combined bracketed text. But we have a classified room that we can go into. We have to leave our phones outside. We're not allowed to write down anything from the text. We can't take those notes. We can now, thanks to the improved transparency, bring a staff person who has classified clearance. But that's about it. And, you know, honestly, I had wanted to go in and read the labor and environmental chapters again. I had looked at them over a year ago. And it took me 3 weeks to get a U.S. Trade Representative staff person to be able to come in and do that with me, even though we're talking about the fast-track legislation could come up any day. And I just wanted to be able to ask questions about it because, you know, clearly the language matters a lot. And more importantly, the enforcement side of things matters even more than the language. And the fact that it's super secret like that, very few of us in Congress have actually had access then to go see that. And if you don't have staff there, the U.S. Trade Representative staff to ask the questions of, you know, you could be reading another language in many cases because it's law, it's trade law text, which doesn't exactly lend itself to, you know, full comprehension if you're just paging through it.
And tell us, like, what the document that you read, and I mean, I think you know, it's understandable. Obviously, a document this sophisticated, it's hard to parse without an expert. But does that even have to be the language that comes up after you pass fast track authority? Could it be like an entirely different language?
Yeah. I mean, this is what they're saying is settled up to this point, except for where they have an area called combined bracketed text, and that's some major areas where there's still some dispute, and generally it'll show you what countries want what countries want, you know, another, you know, bit of language there. But all of this could change again. So what we're looking at right now is a potential preliminary draft that we'd be giving up our right to amend and to debate, and we'd be giving this up actually for 6 years. I mean, 3 years, and without an affirmative vote of Congress, 6 years. That means not just this trade deal and this president. That means any future trade deal with this president, the next president, and potentially the next president. So right. There's a lot that's involved in this, and the fact that we don't know the definitive language yet, because it's not an up or down vote on the text. It's just an up or down vote on giving that authority away to the executive branch, really should trouble everyone, because you have no guarantees what you're seeing now is going to be in a final product.
And I would imagine that any bracketed language that is in contention is probably some of the most important stuff, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be in contention.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and as you can imagine, you know, trying to bring in a country like Vietnam or Malaysia, is a lot more difficult than bringing in Canada when it comes to labor and unions and human trafficking and a number of other areas that become very difficult with certain countries. So, you know, this is really the part that we'd be giving up our complete authority on. And as much as, you know, we look at past trade agreements, and while the language sometimes looks decent in a trade agreement, if you lack enforcement, and I can say this generically from looking at this, we do lack enforcement, you can wind up with what we have right now with the Colombian Free Trade Deal. So this is 4 years later. Basically, and I've met with labor leaders in Colombia just in the last month, basically every bit of the law is written into Colombian law that they are required to, but nothing has actually been implemented. So in the last 4 years since we've signed that agreement, 105 labor leaders have been killed, continuing the same thing that's happened before. So that's the real problem, is if you don't have any real enforcement, again, the language is kind of meaningless, because you have to be able to fully enforce it, whether it be by labor standards or environmental standards or other conditions.
Is there a mechanism to actually enforce that? In other words, could you ever have a mechanism to force other nations to do your bidding, I guess?
Well, essentially, I mean, you could put language in that would be stronger. I mean, let me just give you an example. If we really care about global warming in the world, and especially in that region, we just came up with a decent framework with China with some specifics, about 3 pages of specifics in how to address global warming. But if we don't have that same specificity in a trade agreement in the exact same region, you're clearly not working towards the same goal. So part of it is in language, but part of it is on the enforcement side in the environment, for example, or labor. You have to go through the normal legal system that everyone else goes through. And we recently had a contention on a labor issue with Guatemala, and it took 6 years to resolve, when multinational corporations have written special rules into the trade agreement that they have this ISDS provisions that allow a 3-person tribunal of essentially corporate lawyers who may work on Monday for a corporation, Tuesday and Wednesday they're the fair arbitrators of the law, and by the end of the week they're back on the corporate payroll. That's the process they have that could usurp our sovereignty through laws that any state or community or the United States could pass.
All right, we have to take a break, Congressman, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that ISDS, that's the Investor State Dispute Settlement Process, and how and if that basically creates a baseline but also freezes in amber any advances in labor, consumer, or environmental regulations. And, of course, I also want to talk about how this fast-track authority cuts Medicare. And also this recent development about the implications of Malaysia and their use of slave labor on this deal. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Congressman Pocan in just a minute. So, Congressman, when we broke, you were telling us about the investor state dispute settlement process.
Yeah.
And how that corporations essentially have the ability to go to a 3-person tribunal, which is essentially made up of industry cronies.
Yep. Right.
And basically say this country does not have the right to institute these consumer protections or these environmental protections or these labor protections, because that cuts into our projected profit. So if you want to do that, you have to pay us literally the amount of money that we thought we were going to earn. Does this have the impact of essentially saying that even though we hear the president tout that this has very progressive regulatory impact, does it basically have the impact of setting these things in amber? Like they cannot progress in any way?
Well, this essentially is a way for multinational corporations to change regulations without having to go through any sort of other process. Because when they can sue for loss of future profits, which again is a strong ability that they have through this process, you're essentially going to change and make it harder to have any kind of changes when it comes to regulation. A good example, in Wisconsin, when I was in the state legislature, we passed essentially a Buy America law that any state tax dollars had to be spent in the U.S. We had a call center that had been outsourced to India. In order to do a law like that, if a company, a multinational company, decides that that's taking away their ability to compete for that business, they could sue the state of Wisconsin for that and get a monetary damage that essentially not only would it be a monetary damage for a loss of future profits, but it has the same effect of convincing Wisconsin to change that regulation so you'll no longer have that in place. You could argue a community raising the minimum wage could be sued for that. We've seen it with environmental standards in other countries being sued through these provisions. So it really does give away our sovereignty, and this is one area where I think you find both Democrats and Republicans very, very concerned.
That I was going to ask you about that. Let me just jump ahead to the state of play. The bill in the Senate, the Fast Track Authority, has made it through the Senate, although there could be a problem with that bill, and I want to talk about that in a moment. But as this heads to the House, how many Republicans, do you have a sense of how many Republicans the Speaker Boehner is going to need and how many Democrats he can count on to pass this? Because that's where the roadblock is going to be, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, it's always been a close vote whenever these fast-track authorities come up, or very often it's been a very close vote. Right now, I would guess that we have probably 50 or 60 Republicans voting with the majority of Democrats, and by majority, I mean the vast majority. We probably are losing, right now, I would argue, maybe 20 people, and maybe another 10 to 15 are undecided. Some might just be saying they're undecided, hoping a vote never comes up somehow, so they don't have to take a decision. But, you know, we know that they would need, if we have 60 Republican votes, they need at least 30-plus on the Democratic side, which is a pretty heavy lift. So we know the White House has been very aggressive in reaching out to people, but I'll tell you, when you look at most of the Democrats I talk to, we have all the concerns I listed and then some, including some of the things you talked about with the money coming out of Medicare for the TAA. It's going to be a tough sell, and I know they're going to be very aggressive in the push, and we just need to reach out to all of our members of Congress so that the public is heard, because I still think that's where we're the strongest, is with the people.
Let's talk about that money coming out of this is the there is a subsidiary bill that is basically being passed along with this fast track authority to retrain workers to soften the blow to the extent that it can. The implications of this trade deal on people who lose their jobs. But this money, this funding comes from Medicare. Just tell people that, because I think this is one of those things, if people have a Democratic congressperson or even, frankly, Republican one, that they should be calling them about, yes?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think a lot of Democrats have said we're going to do everything we can to protect Medicare and Social Security, and this would go against, I think, that pledge if you're going to take money out of Medicare for trade adjustment assistance. And I have a company actually in my district just in the last few months leaving a very small community of 2,400 people. It's got 36 jobs. But, you know, if that was Madison, Wisconsin, that'd be equivalent to 3,600 jobs leaving. Oh. Well, they're going to Mexico because of, again, bad, you know, past trade agreements. And to take that money directly from Medicare and then cause more of a problem there is something that I think very few people, if it was an up or down vote just on that, would support. But that's essentially what they're going to be doing when they vote on this. So it's hard for them to say, well, I didn't like that, but I like the totality of the legislation. They're voting for every piece of legislation if they're voting for this.
Right. I mean, that's the whole problem with Fast Track Authority.
Exactly, and we won't have any say. If people, I think everyone will agree that Congress has had very little say up to this point in the drafting. If we pass fast track authority, it is guaranteed we'll have no authority to change anything in the future. So we're going to get pretty much what we get, and it's going to be an up or down vote, and then there's a lot of pressures around that at that point to pass a treaty. So, you know, really this is bad and more bad if we pass a fast track authority. If you really want to be able to say, I want provisions to stop human trafficking, I don't think Brunei that has Sharia law and stones gays and lesbians should be rewarded with a trade agreement. If you want to say any of these things along the way, you need to be able to do it through amendments if you can't convince the White House otherwise to incorporate it right now into language. And if we pass fast track, none of that will happen.
How much of a problem is it going to be? I mean, apparently this provision, which was offered by Senator Menendez regarding that would effectively bar Malaysia from the agreement because of their use of slave labor, that was supposed to be modified by the Republicans writing up. They never did in some way. And so now this has got a bit, I don't know if it's quite a poison pill, but it's a pill that's going to make the bill a little bit nauseous, I guess. How much of that is going to come into play?
Well, I mean, this is probably how the process should work, right? If we don't like a provision, we should be able to amend it to get the right result that we would like to. And the fact that, you know, people are saying this is a poison pill or this could somehow hurt it, that's saying that they really don't want our input. I mean, so far out of a 29-chapter trade agreement, we've gotten one provision that Congress has asked for, and they're saying that that could ruin everything. Tells you how bad this process is. So it will be interesting to see how it's handled when it gets to the House. Paul Ryan is leading the efforts very strongly, but he has got a lot of opposition from, while there's a handful maybe of labor-friendly Republicans, there's a lot of Republicans who, one, don't want to give the president a blank check, and two, there's a number of them who don't want to give Speaker Boehner a blank check because they're not convinced he's looking out for the best interest as they move this deal forward either.
That's interesting. We just have a minute left. So, in short, because I know our audience wants to get involved in this, tell me what do you suggest our audience does when they call their congresspeople who are Democrats? And what do you suggest when they call their congresspeople who happen to be Republicans? What should those constituents be telling them?
Yeah, you know, I think you reach out to the members of Congress and you say every past trade deal has left us with fewer jobs in our country and depressed wages in our country. And so far, from what we've seen, everything is pointing to the same results. You want to make sure that there are protections in there around whatever issue you think is most important. But to give fast-track authority would be giving up your voice as a constituent through their member of Congress, and you ask them not to give up their voice.
And let me ask you, do you ever walk across the aisle and talk to your Republican colleagues and look at them and say, are you guys really going to give the president this much authority after all that they have been through in terms of talking about executive orders and whatnot? Because I imagine that's a big liability for some of those Republicans.
Oh, it's one of the big issues. I'll tell you what I found is the ISDS is something that I can find a lot of people to bond with, because giving up our sovereignty is something that many Republicans don't want to do. And I think it's one of the strongest arguments we have in trying to convince people on the other side of the aisle to vote with us.
Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you so much for your time today. I agree with you on that ISDS thing. It is really stunning. But thanks again for your time today.
Of course. Thank you.
All right, folks. Now we're going to head into the fun half of the show. Remember, it is your memberships that make this show possible. And as our way of saying thank you, we give you an extra, well, some days it's 50 minutes, some days it's 40 minutes, sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's 90 minutes, sometimes it's 30 minutes, like today. Extra time. So become a member today at majority.fm. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. You go there, click on the link, bookmark it, and you'll notice no difference, but we get a little kickback. Also, give us a review on iTunes. That dude on iTunes who keeps erasing his review and reposting it claiming that I only show up for 2.5 shows. How do I do that? Show up for 2.5 shows. Unbelievable.
Maybe he means it more like metaphysically. Like you're only really here.
I, you know, how come I don't get credit when I'm here? Like, man, you gave 150% today. How come that doesn't roll over? Why doesn't my effort roll over?
Well, I think he's saying that you're either doing the bare minimum or below the bare minimum. That's how I
even on the days I'm here.
Yeah.
Like he's basically saying you're 75% there.
That's what he's saying. He's grading you on a curve, and he's still grading you
against
lower.
Myself.
Exactly. Boy. I mean, it's really a competition that exists in his head that you could never possibly win.
So, folks, please, let's give us a review on iTunes. That really helps the program. All right, going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. Also, the app is free, ladies and gentlemen, majorityapp.com. Pick up the app. Use it. You can IM the show. When I'm not forgetting, I give you notices of who's going to be on that day's show. And I don't know. I came very close. John Benjamin was complaining to me about it. And I came very close to just using it one day to just say, this message is just to annoy John Benjamin. But he would not appreciate that it's gone out to thousands of people. But maybe now that you know, at least you guys would appreciate what's involved and how far I'll go just to annoy him. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.